This week's episode of Buffy Virgin is brought to you by DennisComics.com. Dennis is a cartoonist who appears on almost every episode of Buffy Virgin. He raves about monsters and recommends great horror movies that no one else has ever heard of. He has two short comics in the Halloween issue Devilthink that came out last year. Dennis's original graphic novel, Amelia, which is really the thing I should mention first. It's very Lovecraft meets David Cronenberg, and I know other people have said that, but it's a wonderful, dark, and interesting read. Pinup art by Dennis St. John is also featured in issue 5 of Rich Tomasso's She-Wolf. She-Wolf is beautiful, artsy, and strange. If, when you're listening to Buffy Virgin, if any of Dennis's recommendations for other films and stuff resonate with you at all, then you would absolutely love his comics. Dennis has a really well-developed horror sensibility that comes across in his comics. If you like horror stuff at all, you'd really enjoy his stuff. So get your horror comics fixed at DennisComics.com. That's Dennis with one N, D-E-N-I-S, and comics with an X because it's cool, C-O-M-I-X. In every generation, there is a virgin. He alone will watch the vampires, the demons, and the forces of darkness for the first time, at least once a week. I am a Buffy virgin. Well, hello, and welcome to another episode of Buffy Virgin. In this episode, we watched Lie to Me, which is the season 2 episode. Was it? I have no idea which episode number this is. I feel lost now. Seven?
Seven, yes.
Episode 7 of season 2. Wow. So on the podcast today, we have Travis.
Hi there.
Dennis.
Hey, guys. At Dennis Comics.
Right. Constantly self-promoting Dennis. And John.
Hi, I'm John. I'm just me. There's no at.
No ats. I'm at Michael Poley. But if you message me about this podcast, I'll deny that I'm on it.
Wow. You're real proud of this work, aren't you, Mike?
I am really proud of it. I think I mentioned just before we started the podcast that someone actually listened to most, if not all, of this podcast and connected with me about it and said they enjoyed it. So anecdotally.
And I want to apologize to them for all of the heavy breathing I've been doing in season 2. I didn't realize until I just started listening to the podcast that I'm too close to the mic.
But yeah, it's been really positive and rewarding. And I, of course, was joking. If you message me related to this podcast, I will acknowledge it. I've constantly tweeted about it. At least twice a week, I tweet about this podcast.
You posted a great GIF of John reacting to something.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't see that until today. What was I doing?
Jazz hands. I don't know.
The thing you were referencing to that GIF, you were talking about getting Dennis all to yourself. For some reason, anymore. And that is your getting Dennis all to yourself look.
Well, and it's accurate. And all I need is the impact title on the bottom so that we know why I'm feeling that way.
I'm trying to use it as a general purpose reaction, GIF. So let's see what happens. It is weird to use GIFs at work, but that's what I'm trying to do. And to integrate characters they don't know. But so many people at the company I work at, it's possible that people might think that they just don't know that person. And so they're like, they'll just play along.
Wow. I like that you're trying to do that, which suggests that you're like attempting and failing to some extent. Like this is like your exercise routine. This is what you've been putting off.
Yeah, I'm just trying to integrate GIFs that weren't made from a GIF making website, but my own, you know, stuff that I see that's interesting.
Yeah. There's I can't remember the name of the website now, but there's a Google website that will like automatically make GIFs of your like camera for you, and it's pretty fun. We play with that at work sometimes. I don't think it's like linked, but anyway, not a good story. Just GIFs are fun. It's fun to make GIFs. GIFs, whatever.
Yeah, it's correctly pronounced GIFs.
We don't need to get into that.
I've been told that people only want to hear us trail off the Buffy subject. They actually,
I do like the joke of like giraffic, like, like it's GIF for giraffic. And then that leads to like Jurassic Park.
That sounds lovely. So that's a theme park with all giraffes?
Yes.
But I think most importantly, it's not the current, you know, present day giraffes. It's the giraffe that was around 60 million years ago giraffe.
which was subtle. Like,
it's just subtle. It's got scale. You
know? No, it's just like it was just the first mammal. It was like just this like tiny little rat. And, like, this is the equivalent of a Jurassic giraffe.
So, did you guys watch this episode of Buffy?
Yes.
I've watched it so many times. I actually watched it with Travis and Dennis when Dennis was in town briefly.
Yeah, it was fun, guys.
And then rewatched it twice this weekend.
Wow. So you're prepared.
He likes this one. All right. I'll do the opener.
Okay, yeah, so please get us started. Tell us what happened.
All right, what happens? Okay.
Everybody else, mute your microphones.
The episode opens ominously with a small child appearing to be Drusilla's next victim, only to be saved by boring hero Angel. But for Buffy, who can't see what's being said, this looks suspicious because Drusilla and Angel are way too comfortable. We cut next to school, with Buffy and Willow writing notes about this mystery woman. On a side note, we get to hear Cordelia with a monologue that is, unsurprisingly, pro-Marie Antoinette, as if the viewer needed any more reasons to be ambivalent towards her. Buffy is glum about a relationship with Angel when another dark-haired young man enters her life, with a correspondingly strange name, Ford. Actually, the name is Billy Fordham, so Ford, that makes sense. Of course, Ford is an older man, but at least he is just 1 year older compared to 220 years and some change. Angel, of course, lies to Buffy about Drusilla, because she's an evil vampire who would gladly kill unattended children, and he made her that way. Talk about embarrassing baggage. With Buffy completely confused about a relationship and having major trust issues, Ford is the right guy at the right time, except he also lies to her. But before that, he reveals that he knows she is the vampire slayer. The one fatal flaw Buffy doesn't ask is how or why he knows she is a slayer, because then maybe he would tell her he was obsessed with becoming a vampire. That's how he knows. Ford is joined by his friends Diego and Chanterelle in their master plot to become vampires, which I can't help but think it would have been more successful if they had run a cooler underground vampire speakeasy, but that's neither here nor there. It is the lie regarding killing the vampire in the robbery that ultimately catches Ford out in the open and is the beginning of his undoing. When Buffy confronts Ford in the Sunset Club, that's the extremely strange underground bar for humans who want to be vampires, we find out the real reason Ford wants to be a vampire. He is dying from brain cancer with weeks to months to live, a life stolen in the prime of youth. Unfortunately, while Ford knows that Buffy's a vampire slayer, he doesn't have a Giles around to tell him the rest of the story. That when you are turned into a vampire, your soul leaves your body, and a demon sets up shop in there instead. Buffy, unsurprisingly, is able to free everyone from the Sunset Club, but most surprisingly is that Spike holds up his end of the bargain and does make Ford a vampire in the very end. Buffy, still the slayer, she carries out her destiny and duty with heavy heart and dispatches Ford back to dust.
I'm surprised that you called Angel boring in that first part of your summary.
Well, you know, I'm writing to an audience here who Angel's an extremely boring character.
I really like the cold open just because, I mean, Angel is boring, but Drusilla is awesome. And
yeah,
she is so extra nuts trying to eat that kid. And like, what a creepy scene.
I rewatched that and I was like, I can't believe how Angel is actually really nice to Drusilla. Like, this is a really weird character moment for him because he actually wants her and Spike to leave town. Like, he doesn't care about killing them. It's super strange. He just wants them to leave. Like,
he's got a, yeah.
He has zero agenda to get back at them or to get them off the planet. And it's like so strange.
Yeah. And I think it's partially because we don't really understand what the relationship is yet. And it's complicated shades of gray, 50 shades.
Well, we do learn about the relationship in this episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Has this confession to Buffy that's pretty awesome. I actually am shocked that he confessed that to her. I feel like that goes against my knowledge of how television works. Like, that stuff should be a secret until the end of the season. So it's surprising when Angel tells his sad, shitty Drusilla story about how he stalked her and was obsessed with her and forced her into a convent and then vampirized her. Like, what a jerk. That's like, it's unforgivable.
And she did seem a little, like, Buffy did seem a little genuinely freaked by it, because it is, like, it's not just normal vampire stuff. It's, like, extra creepy vampire stuff.
So I've watched this episode a ton of times, like, a billion times. And there's one scene in the Sunset Club where Ford is, like, I don't know, speaking aloud or mimicking like this vampire movie on screen, saying the dialogue like in step.
It's the Jack Palance Dracula movie, which
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Dennis. I wrote that down as a question.
Like, it's such a weird choice. It must only be because it was like free in the Warner Archive or whatever. Because like, I've never seen that movie. Like, I don't know anybody who is like, oh, you know what's my favorite Dracula movie? The Jack Palance Dracula movie.
We should watch that, actually.
But my point is, that is not my recommendation for the week.
Yeah, I know. But like, Angel's monologue about how he, like, tortured Drusilla, drove her insane, like, I was listening to the episode and I was speaking, I was like doing the exact same thing this strange character Ford did. And like, it's a really great monologue to say out loud, like, cause it's like, it's written really easily to say, and it's super crazy and super fun. Which
monologue, the one that.
When he talks to Buffy, he's like, you know, tell me about Drusilla. And then he's like,
yeah. Do it now.
And then, well, you know, it's really easy to do. So it's just, and it's kind of like crazy fun, strange things to say.
I will say there's the best Angel joke in this episode, which is when Angel has to get permission to go and visit Willow. And then, you know, Buffy makes a joke about him having to ask to get to her place. And he's like, I'm just being polite. Right.
I thought
understated funny vampire gag in this
episode. I thought the best Angel joke this episode was him complaining about these people don't understand anything about vampires.
Oh,
how they dress, and then a guy walks by dressed exactly like him. Which also leads me to my whole thing about, like, because this is a world where vampires are real, goth is probably not as much a thing, right? Because like like, you're just not going to dress up like a real monster, right? So that this club seems especially out of place to like Xander and Willow, who like I think if we were in high school and we went to this club, we'd be like, oh, dumb goth club. But they're like, these people are worshiping vampires, they're hanging out in coffins, this is so weird. Like, it's just
I'd love to be actually in a coffin that looks like an old-timey vampire.
Yeah, that's great. And I guess that was one of the main makeup guys on the show playing that.
That's what separates it from being a goth club, is the old man in a coffin thing that probably doesn't work in a traditional goth club, but maybe it does.
I think the best like vampire related like burn like phrase is like when Buffy's about to kill Drusilla and she's like, make one more step and you'll have to take your girlfriend home in an ashtray. It's like, you really can't make a lot of like, those threats. Like, it's only vampires you can make that threat about. Like, it's such a limited great threat. And I was like, that's just strange. Like, you can't normally use that threat. It makes
unless you have a flamethrower.
Yeah, unless you have a flamethrower or you're about to, you know,
or you work in a crematorium or something.
I'm not sure you can even make that threat about vampires, because they don't ever, when you dust a vampire, there's never any cleanup. The dust seems to just blow away even when you're inside. I've never once seen like dust, maybe there's a couple times in Buffy where there's dust on something after the
fight. I think there will be. And I can picture people like dusting their hands off. And
yeah.
Well, Ford like inhales some dust this episode. Like,
or he pretends to.
Well, he pretends to inhale dust. It's very strange. All right, do you want to get back on the format?
So the format here, we're going to talk about musings, and then we have, you know, questions for the group and themes, and then predictions, kill count, and recommendations. So back to musings here. I had a funny thought. Like, I feel like there's this shitty TV quote that Drusilla has in that first scene. I don't mean to go scene by scene, but she says, oh, this is only the beginning, right? And it just feels like this is for a trailer of some kind that, you know, will get made at some point and probably was made, you know, for this episode. And that stuff, like, ugh. I feel like there's a bunch of moments that in this particular episode that feel like they're for a trailer that maybe was just a made-for-TV trailer for the show. So you can always have a bad guy say, oh, no, it's not the end. It's only the beginning. And it always works in the trailer. It's great. So that was a stupid musing. One more, sorry. Drusilla eating a kid. Has any vampire eaten a kid so far in this show? I feel like that hasn't happened. So it was a particularly creepy way to open. Even though we've seen so many things get consumed by vampires.
Yeah. I mean, the episode kind of does hinge on us thinking vampires are scary, as opposed to some other episodes where there's a lot more room to think. I mean, that's the whole, obviously the point of the episode is that we need to think they're scary as opposed to just cool, right? So like compared to like school hard, where it's almost the opposite, where we go from thinking they're scary to thinking they're cool in the end, this one's kind of the opposite.
This is our after school special, not to hang out with vampires lesson.
Absolutely not. And man, the other after school special lesson, which maybe is a, you know, into the themes and stuff, but the, you know, if somebody knows your secret and you didn't tell them your secret, like you should not trust them.
Good call.
I love that whole sequence though, with Ford, you know, having the relationship that kind of Willow and Xander have, and then everyone being jealous and it's assuming that something's wrong with it. And of course they're right, but it's still like that felt like a resonant kind of relationship that I think always happens in life where, you know, like when Dennis or you're in town and it's like, oh, this is my good friend, Dennis. He gets special access to me from the past and you've never met him.
That's right. Like
there's a lot of those moments.
Well, this whole episode's about friendship.
Yeah.
That's what I decided.
Oh, I thought it was about Buffy's bra this episode.
Hello. Yeah,
I will talk about that offline because this episode is hilarious, actually. And it's like they know what they're doing. It's very strange.
Can you be more specific about what you're talking about, Travis?
No, because I don't want to be a podcast talking about women's bras.
But is she wearing a bra in this episode?
I don't think that's really my business.
Okay.
Wow. We could not provoke this. All right.
Well, we tried our best, viewers and listeners at home.
If you've seen this episode and you're any intuitive at all, you'll realize there's one scene where two things don't make sense, except they do. I guess two things make sense in one scene. And then you'll say, oh, yeah, I guess that makes sense in this scene, although it is still strange.
Wow. So Eric, this is great.
You can tweet Michael your theories. I'm not on Twitter. I'm sorry.
Travis, there's no repercussions for what you say because you're not on Twitter.
I'm not on Twitter. I can't get trolled by anybody. I'm not on Twitter.
I tagged you on a photo on Facebook and people, like somebody commented, like trying to get in touch with you. And I was like, that's not how Facebook works. Like, this is on my page, not on Travis's. But it just shows how like hard it is for people to communicate with you online. People are desperate.
I know. Don't worry. Tweet your theories at Michael Poli.
Sure.
Yeah, that's his full name. And Twitter handle.
So any other musings from this episode?
For part one, right? We have still all the other parts.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
This is the first really good look at Willow's room, and it's a little different than when we saw it in season one. My notes are not great for this, sorry.
I really do love that.
Well, I love how
Angel is... Oh, go ahead, sorry.
So, I mean, I guess, like, I don't know why they make Cordelia so unlikable. I mean, this whole thing with Marie Antoinette, also some great jokes about someone mishearing, you know, oppressed and, you know, depressed. You know, like, there's an oppressed, depressed joke about the peasants with Marie Antoinette that's charming. Mm-hmm. It's like, man, Cordelia... She's not that bad of a person, but just like she can't catch a break yet.
Well, this is the second time she's sharing, you know, sort of contrarian opinions in class because she had the whole thing where she cited against Shylock as well.
Yeah, she did.
And in favor of Marie Antoinette. So,
like, what is the next thing you're going to assassinate her character with? Like, is she going to be like pro witch trial?
Well,
you know, she was pro.
Somebody's got to be
monarchy. She was.
Yeah. We couldn't be any more clear about how we're supposed to feel about Cordelia, right? Cordelia,
and yet we don't, and yet everybody loves her because she's actually the best.
She's amazing. It's like this. This incredible.
Wife of Bath is misunderstood. She's just enjoying her life.
she's gonna be sticking up for King George.
Richard
stole all of his tea. And just wasted it. Those, you know, I don't know. I don't know what she's gonna. Who the hell she's gonna stand up for next?
God. Beth's misunderstood. He's just following his dreams. Right?
Yeah, I really love the Sunset Club. I want to talk about the Sunset Club for a long time.
Yeah, and Chanterelle and Diego.
Oh, they're wonderful characters.
So let's talk about my thing, which is friends, true friends, are not yes men or yes women. And so Buffy seems to think in this episode that a good friend is a yes friend. Like, they'll just do whatever the other friend thinks. And I don't think that Xander and Willow are bad friends because they're checking out this new person, Ford, for a variety of reasons. One, he has dark hair. Two, he's got a ridiculous name. Three, he's got no school record. All right? I mean, that's three strikes. But, like, being a good friend, you should be allowed to do detective work on your own. And they did some good legwork in this case. So I think this episode's all about friendship. I think that Buffy didn't give Willow and Xander a fair shake.
It would read that way if Xander didn't have such a bad track record of like being a creep about Buffy and jealousy. Like if this is the first time he had done that, it might read more like you're saying. But given Xander's track record, it's really hard to feel sympathetic with him.
Yeah, but
he's going along with Willow. Like it's not like he was alone. If he was alone doing the investigating, yeah. I mean, maybe he's motivated by jealousy, and Willow's motivated by friendship. But in the end, there's still like a little bit of friendship there.
I'd like to see more Willow and Angel together hanging out.
Yeah,
they're a good team.
That's a really fun show.
Did anyone else imagine a net remake with Willow Rosenberg instead of Sandra Bullock, aka Allison Hannigan? Because she's like, I'm the net girl, and I'm like, wow, they should remake the net with. Yeah, with Allison Hannigan as Sandra Bullock's character.
So you say not now, but they should have done it in the mid-90s?
She was too young in the 90s. Sandra Bullock was like maybe 30, 31.
Why does David Boreanaz have to even be in it?
No, I'm not saying he has to be in it, but it also could be remade as the net, and there could be vampires in there as well. Like, I'm just throwing that out there.
So this is the most Travis idea I've heard in a while.
But what if instead of, you know how in the net the bad guy's name is Captain America? Ooh. What if it turns out he's Thor? That's the twist. That's a Marvel movie.
Wait, so it's just a complete riff on the net. It's like a made-for-YouTube movie, one of these?
I think Armin Shimmerham would be a great guy to replace. in the remake, he could replace... who's the guy who went crazy? He was like a comedian that went insane.
Which one?
He had like dark... He was the lawyer. Remember the net, the lawyer, the net? Who's that guy? He's like super famous.
I don't know. I'm surprised that I remembered the Captain America thing. My memory of the net isn't like super tight.
Okay, so speaking of old, internet movies. So the bar in The Matrix.
Dennis Miller.
The bar in The Matrix that he goes to at the beginning, and then the Sunset Club. I feel like they're drawing on the same thing. But what's the origin of like the goth,
like a goth club
image of that image? I feel like that image it obviously doesn't start there. What movies does it start in? I'm thinking like
Bram Stoker.
So I think this is all like Vampire the Masquerade kind of stuff. Cause like when I'm watching this, I think it's like all from the Vampire Masquerade source book somehow. I don't know if I'm not super familiar with it, like
right-wise,
but I am familiar with the PC game that came out in like 2002, which is amazing, but the graphics are weird and it's got a Monkey Island vibe occasionally. Like, it totally feels like a story that would happen in that game world, in the world of, I don't know what you call that world. There's probably a name for it. Because like that show, I'm sure was somewhat inspired by Buffy, because there was a Vampire the Masquerade show around this time as well that dealt with, I mean, they took it a wrong direction because they made it all about crime families, warring vampire crime families, and made it just kind of like a crime mafia show. But that Sunset Club thing is totally in that world. Like, it's totally a goth D&D thing. But I don't know if it was in a movie beforehand.
I'm trying to think of one, because obviously this is before The Matrix, and I'm trying to think, what is it? What's the visual reference there? And I'm having a hard time putting my finger on it.
Like, the goths? I don't know. I thought, Bram Stoker, the Dracula remake was out in 1992, apparently.
Yeah, but no, but like not the vampire part aspect, but like the idea of specifically of a bar that is crazy and underground, and everybody wears black and looks super cool, and the music is empowering. And
I mean, I think it's what's coming to my mind is Doom Generation.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Well, this is where it's gonna. This is challenging for us because we weren't a part of like the '90s club scene or even the '80s club scene.
We're too young.
And too lame, mostly.
Yeah, but we're not too young and lame to have seen the movie. And I feel like Buffy's making a reference to some not specific movie, but genre, right?
Yeah. So like, well, one of my recommendations this week is Thirst, which is like, what, the 80s? Thirst is 80s.
No.
That might have been...
Yeah, or even The Hunger, right? Like,
yeah.
Hunger and Thirst. This the...
there's... all right.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like it for me, it's the D&D material, but maybe, you know, that Lost Boys stuff is kind of cool.
Yeah, like, Lost Boys kind of has it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's not the hanging around waiting to become a vampire thing. Because this, right. Well, I guess it's like, it's two things, right? It's the Sunset Club, but then some people in the Sunset Club really want to be vampires. Other people just want to be a part of the scene, I'm guessing. But I love the vampire death cult thing. I mean, there's still a lot of stuff there that doesn't feel totally explored. We'll get into predictions later, but I think this Sunset Club is going to make a comeback. I'll be more specific later in predictions.
Maybe a Sundown Club.
Well, I mean, I think it seems reasonable. Like, if there were real vampires with, like, all the life extension people out there who, you know, want to freeze their bodies or, you know, whatever other weird solutions, scanning your brain into a computer for immortality. If vampires were real, you know there'd be some Silicon Valley company trying to, like, you know, turn those people into vampires. That would be a real thing.
Can I use this as a springboard for this special segment here about becoming a vampire? So I, on Reddit, saw this crazy link to a book called Transformative Experience. It's like an Oxford scholarship online book, I guess. And I don't know anything about the author, but the abstract is published and it kind of talks through this issue of becoming a vampire from a fun philosophical angle. And it totally fit perfectly while I was watching this show. So I'm just going to read a part of the abstract because I think it fits. So it's from a chapter in the book called Becoming a Vampire. Imagine you have the chance to become a vampire. With one swift, painless bite, you'll be permanently transformed into an elegant and fabulous creature of the night. As a member of the undead, your life will be completely different. You'll experience a range of intense, revelatory new sense experiences. You'll gain immortal strength, speed, and power, and you'll look fantastic in everything you wear. You also need to drink blood and avoid sunlight. Suppose all of your friends, people whose interests, views, and lives are similar to yours, have already decided to become vampires, and all of them tell you that they love it. They describe their new lives with unbridled enthusiasm and encourage you to become a vampire too. They assuage your fears and explain that modern vampires don't kill humans. They drink the blood of cows and chickens. They say things like, I'd never go back, even if I could. Life has meaning and a sense of purpose now that it never had when I was human. I understand reality in a way I couldn't just before. It's amazing. Suppose that you also know that if you pass up this opportunity, you'll never have another chance. To make a choice, you want to make the best decision you could, and that means you want to proceed as rationally as possible. Become a vampire, be a big, really big. It is a decision to undertake lightly. You'd want to choose the smartest option that would make your life as good as it could ever have been after you made your choice. But you don't want to make a huge mistake either. The trouble is, how can you make an informed choice? You can't know what it's like to be a vampire until you are one. And if you can't know, without becoming one, you can't compare the character of the lived experience, what it's like to be you right now, a mere human, to the character of the lived experience, what it'd be like to be a vampire. This means if you want to make this choice about what it's concerning what you want your lived experience to be like in the future, you can't do it rationally. You can't do it by weighing the competing options concerning what it'd be like and choosing on this basis. So anyway, the book argues that we find ourselves in this situation for a lot of our significant life decisions where you can't make a rational choice. And the choosing to become a vampire is not a rational choice.
That's excellent. I think that's right. I think that that does feel like most of my choices because, yeah, you'll never know if you'd be happier. You never will get the answer to that question. That reminds me of the movie Daybreakers, though. It sounds like Daybreakers.
I'm sorry. Is this what is this book's backstory?
Oh, just put a link to it in the chat here. Sounds too specific, right? Sounds so like about this episode. And why isn't there a Buffy reference?
It's a whole book, or is it just a chapter?
This is just one chapter in the book.
But the whole book's about becoming a vampire.
No, it's about transformative experiences. This is one chapter. It was published in 2014, so it's an older book.
Well,
so old.
I'm going to start using that metaphor to think about all of my life choices now.
How is going home to visit my family like choosing to become a vampire or not?
Should I be bit? What's the best way to be bit safely?
Well, I think the key is that if whatever your life choice, you need to change your name to Diego ahead of time.
And wear a fabulous cape. Just,
oh man.
So sparkly.
Diego's better than Chanterelle. I mean, let's give Marvin.
Man, I feel terrible for her when Angel just takes her down immediately. About like making fun of people who want to be vampires. It's not that great, of course. Then
he's the lonely ones.
Yeah,
yeah.
They the walk who, with the night.
The actress who plays Chanterelle. I don't know if it's a subtle performance, but it's a really good performance. I really like the way that she plays, like kind of ashamed in that moment.
Yeah. Well, you feel right. Like she's a person who's used to being bullied. You know.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
You're like, oh, poor Chanterelle.
She's in an underground club to become a vampire. Not because things are going great in her life.
She's.
Well, I guess I'll do a. I guess I'll do a prediction. I guess I don't do predictions, but
because you've seen it all, why would you do prediction and predict?
Well, I was just gonna say to all of the listeners that don't worry, Chanterelle comes back, not in Buffy, but in Angel. And that's not a spoiler.
I disagree with you.
I guess she does. She comes back in Buffy? I guess she does. But also, I see her more often in Angel. And yeah, that's not bad.
I like the way you say that. Like, Angel is, like, not just a show, but, like, a place you go to hang out.
Yep, that was not the right phrasing.
I'm going to go see my Angel friends.
Yeah. So Mike, what's going on with this Act 3?
I feel like Ford is a surprisingly strategic and good at putting things together, though he shouldn't. He just wants to tell everyone how smart he is all the time. So annoying.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's like a fun character problem that I enjoy. Even the stupid part where he connects with, Spike, and he's like, aren't you going to tell me that you have 30 seconds or else you'll kill me, like that stuff. And then, you know, when Buffy like follows him, like, oh, you even said exactly what I thought you would say about.
Yeah. He's got the weird obsession with like cliches of some genre that he's watching.
Yeah.
Right. That includes the Jack Palance Dracula.
Yeah. He's really reading from his own script. It's quite the character,
but he was able to totally predict Buffy's, like when she would figure things out, right?
But I mean, that means he knew that. I mean, I guess his plan was for the book to get stolen, like about Drusilla, at the exact time when someone would see it. Which I guess is not hard. It's a really poorly, you know, pulled off like theft. So I how couldn't it fail? In a way of like exposing that vampire wasn't killed. But it seems it's necessary for it to be a surprise. Like, I don't know. Anyway, his plan all falls apart. I was a little sad at how easy it was. You know, Buffy just traps Drusilla or whatever, and it's like, hey, I'll kill her. And it's like, oh, that's the end of this. That's the end of my plan.
Yeah. Well, maybe he never expected vampires to have such deep connections as Spike and Drew.
Oh, yeah. But I came up with a last of fake names. Like Fords, right? So Billy Fordham, his name's Ford. So then that makes Willow Rosenberg, Rose. Xander Harris becomes Harry. And then Buffy Summers, well, that one, she has like Buffy and Summers. Those are all kind of three real names. It's tough to really fix that one.
What is this game? Call her
Sums.
Sums,
yeah.
If your last name has more than one syllable, and that's
Rain Man. I'm just saying, like, if you were to do the Billy Fordham thing, which is like the insane thing, which is, you know, Billy Fordham, his name's Ford. So in the show, Willow Rosenberg could be called Rose, you know. Then, and so you can't, I couldn't come up.
Actually, I get your connection because Buffy would be Thumb and you would be More. I get it.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get connection going on.
There'd be some more over there.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
More.
Now you got to reverse it for Rupert Giles because he already goes by his last name Giles. So you reverse it. You could call him Rupert if you wanted.
Well, Rupert.
You can call him Gil. Gil's a
good.
It's a name. It's a name.
I feel like this is just based on you thinking Ford is a really weird name, right?
No. It's based upon going from your name is Billy Fordham to my name is Ford. That's my beef. His name Billy was already an abbreviation of William. And then he's like, I'm going to abbreviate Fordham to Ford. Anyways, that was my beef.
That is not the problem with Ford.
Well, no, I'm not saying that's his character flaw. I'm just saying, like, that's a flaw. I'm just saying, like, Willow Rosenberg could go by Rose. I'm saying this is before
Titanic was
big. This is even before Titanic was big. But I'm just saying, by Bill of Fordham's logic, our last names could be much simpler and be used as our first name.
But we don't know that he chose that nickname. That could have been a nickname chosen by Buffy in the fifth grade.
He's a senior in high school. I think he can choose what he wants to be called.
My experience of being a senior in high school is not the experience that you get to choose your own nicknames. It is definitely not.
What was your nickname in senior years of high school?
Well, I seem to recall somebody calling me Dave Shit Eater Jamdus.
I don't think that was me. I called you affectionately, Plandis. All right.
I remember Plandis.
Yeah. Plandis, I like. I've kept that one. I still call myself that in my internal monologue. But yeah.
What's Plandis going to do next? He's planning something.
I remember Plandis. I don't. Who called you?
As I recall, there was a website and there was a character who wasn't me, but was named Dave Eater Jamdus, and I was supposed to infer nothing from this. That's what I recall.
Oh, God. I don't know.
So all I'm saying is I don't think you get to choose your own nicknames when you are a senior in high school. That's all I'm saying.
What website was this? Was this the Thug Science website?
This is the Thug Science website, yes.
Yeah, I agree. You're not allowed to choose your name. Until you,
yeah. you are allowed to choose your name. This wasn't even a nickname.
Not until you get.
No, it's a nickname. Yeah.
I don't know. He was using it like a name. That's what I'm going to say.
Not until you leave high school can you choose your own name.
He left high school. I'll challenge his theory. He was high school. He was just. What were you doing? He was just loitering at a different high school. But he was no longer in school, my friends.
What are we arguing here exactly?
I don't know. This is all based on a weird theory of names that is hard for me to follow.
My thing with Ford is not his name. My thing with Ford is that I'm trying to understand how and what is he just like the 2.0 version of Owen? Is he, because he's so much exactly the same as Owen?
No,
He's more interesting than Owen. Owen was so banal. I think Ford's like an actually interesting character that has a dilemma that he's trying to smartly solve, but I think it's fun to follow that character. It's just, it's sad, right? And I think the ending of this really plays out well, which is like Ford's story is really sad and it's a painful story to follow. And when, in the end, the name of the episode, right? Lie to Me, where Buffy says, "Hey Giles, just tell me that the world is a better place than it really is, please, to make it okay." And it's like, and he tells the, you know, like a funny little anecdote about how bad guys always have horns and the good guys always win. And like, yeah, it's like, it's a rad choice for the show to make is that we make some dark decisions. Of course, all this could have been a lot darker, could have killed the kid in the beginning of the show, you know?
Yeah. My theory is that, so Ford represents, like if we are alone with basically horrible decisions to make and you don't have your friends around and Ford didn't have Buffy Summers anymore, you know, you have a really wild moral compass. This is my take on it. Is that alone, you have a really wild moral compass when something terrible is happening to you, and that it's friends, good friends, that ground you and help you make the right decision. And I think that's what this episode, to me, is all about. And he had a tragic decision to make, and of course he chose the most evil, vile one. And that's what he says. I really missed you, Buffy Summers. And it's like, to me, that's why Ford's character is more interesting than Owen, I guess. Because that's what, to me, he represents. Any person in any horrible circumstance with no one to talk to.
Yeah, I think that's well stated about Ford. So do we have any, I guess, deeper questions for the group or themes? Do you wanna, I guess we already touched on this theme about friendship.
Let's see.
We've talked about a lot of different things already.
Oh, yeah. I said it's a TV show on a network, the WB. You know, this episode, who had a time catered primarily to youth-oriented audience and programming, I think this episode about death at a young age is what keeps making it interesting. to me, that's why it's still relevant. You know, it, there's all this will all this continues to happen, and we continue to have to, you know, to make. Sorry, I don't know why Dennis is laughing right now.
I'm still thinking. Sorry, that's why I was muted for so long. I'm still thinking about Dave shooting your chance. I'm sorry, John. I totally forgot about that. I'm gonna mute myself again.
Well, my point is destroyed. I don't know. I thought it was cool because this is like a youth-oriented, like, you know, network, and then it was trying to deal with, you know, death or cancer, you know, and I can't remember if there'd been any more like, you know, youth-oriented shows that dealt with that subject matter before. I still think that's what gives it its usefulness now. It's, this problem hasn't gone away, and if anything, nowadays people are more isolated. There's so many more of those Fords, you know, than it used to be. Used to, you know, grow up in the same town. Well, sorry, Dennis. Up in the town, you live there. You have your friends. You don't move around.
Is that why my moral compass is all wonky?
No. You had a great moral compass. It's because you didn't move too far away.
That's right. But, I can still come back. You
know, I think people are just really isolated these days. Yeah, my hunch is they're more isolated in high school than ever, but I don't know.
Well, I mean, definitely our codependence with technology, right, is it's the ultimate, most isolating, you know, thing that we could be using. Like, here's a great example is four guys talking on a video chat service. And then, I mean, no, that's good. I mean, we're using it to stay not isolated, but it's still like you turn it off and you're alone. I mean, that's really tough. I was
I just think it's a mature episode for a WB show. Like, it's a great, I don't know, whatever. I'll stop reminiscing about this.
No, it's a good, I mean, it's the dilemma, right? Cancer or something, you know, something like another crazy opportunity. I mean, I feel like the episode where they, the name is escaping me, where they're trying to bring the Franken football player back to, you know, his girlfriend back together, right? It's like, there's really high stakes for that. There's high stakes for this. Like, these are tough choices they have to make. Like, oh, do we kill someone to potentially create a new life for that person against their will? I don't know.
This episode feels a lot more real than that, though.
Oh,
like the Frankenstein episode is kind of cartoony, and this one, I mean, this one, like, it seems cartoony at first, I think, in some ways, especially with like the goth club and like Diego. But then there's at the end when, you know, Buffy has to stake him 5 seconds after he breaks out. Like, that's it feels pretty real. It feels pretty emotional.
Mm-hmm. I'm actually surprised we haven't gone gaga over the fact that this is a vampire themed episode. It's one of the I was just realizing that we haven't kind of made a point of that, but yeah, this is totally vampire themed.
Yeah, and it's one that doesn't take like vampire stuff sort of as given, or I feel like it's actually extending the vampire idea and making it its own and making a unique statement about it, which is cool.
And I think it's kind of cool because it's like, you know, in some ways it's good. I feel like they draw out the drama really well in this episode. I think the pacing of this episode's pretty good. Could be a little bit better. But, you know, I think to me, this episode makes it interesting. Like, how do you make the vampire story interesting again? Well, you mix in people who have totally different views about vampires, or people who are uninformed and they have their own contrasting, you know, their own emotions and motives. And I think that's what makes it more interesting. Because it's not just, oh, the Scooby Gang versus the vampires. Well, it's like the Scooby Gang, then these random people, and then this kid, and these. And to me, that's why it gets more interesting. And I think that's where they can draw out a little more drama and a little more, you know, myth in here.
Yeah, there's an arc of like Batman Legends of the Dark Knight comics that touches on similar themes that I really enjoy, where some kids are curious about who Mr. Freeze is, right? And I don't think they have there's maybe some idea that they're going to manipulate Mr. Freeze into helping one of the dude's moms who has cancer, which is probably how all these things get going. But like, they kind of try to sneak into Mr. Freeze's lair at just kids, and most of them end up getting killed. And it's just like, the stakes are so high when you bring in characters that are like outside of the know, even though they, you know, these characters know a little bit. Ford knows a little bit, like, that Buffy's a vampire slayer. It might be fun to see something that's more from Ford and his team's perspective and bring in Buffy and the gang later. But, you know, of course, Buffy can't do that because its sense of drama is different. And Buffy's always the main character. But yeah, I like.
Yeah, there are some episodes, or there's some issues of the Buffy comic. I think there's a solo series just about vampires that, like, either doesn't have slayers or barely touches on them. So that those are kind of interesting. There's one where it's like a girl at a party who gets bit, and it's her experience, like, becoming a vampire and, like, seeing things like being able to, like, see at night differently and, like, observing, like, all this. She does it a lot through Lord of the Rings, and she's like, suddenly she feels like, now I get the orcs, right? We are the orcs. So that's a little bit of that.
Yeah, I would have loved, like, follow-up episode. I guess I would have loved a follow-up episode where we had, like, the characters, like, that, like, Chanterelle's character, or, you know, or
a whole Chanterelle series.
Well, I'm just saying, like, I would love to have, like, one real, like, real follow-up where, like, we flash, like, we see Chanterelle and, like, you know, post this episode, then, like, get, like, one or two really good, like, flashbacks of, like, what her life was like that brought her to that place. Like, if this was, like, you know, brought her to the Sunset Club, like what was going down? I mean, the mystery is good, don't get me wrong. I mean, I think, can, you know, because of how the episode has to be written, how many, I mean, I would, there certainly wasn't room in that episode to have the flashbacks for Chanterelle Diego. And there was barely enough time for Ford to do his exposition explaining his issues. But man, I would have loved to have seen, like a Chanterelle focused episode. That would have been really fun. Like,
I would just prefer to get one scene of Giles at a monster truck rally. That would have been, that would really made it for me. But
that would have been good.
No, I agree with you. It would be cool to see more about her. Chanterelle is an interesting character, and she's kind of out of, she's surprisingly sympathetic, I think, because she's so good at being bullied by Angel. We really feel for her right away.
Yeah, and she's so unprepared for the realities of vampirism.
They all are, right? Especially Diego.
I don't know why they're so unprepared. Because they make a secret of it.
Well, I think it's because they're still treating, they know vampires are real, but they're still treating them like creatures from movies, right? So it's like,
no.
It's about the, you know, the cliches of the genre versus the reality of Spike.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess,
you know, it reminds me, well, I guess we got another episode coming up that I happen to have seen already, but this episode is coming up with where Giles and his friends are all clubbing around as kids, I guess, and being possessed by a spirit, right? And it's like, this will be really fun, right? Like, I guess it's this theme of, like, playing around with the supernatural casually when there's huge consequences for that. Like, they are kind of playing around, right? Because you see how terrified they are when Spike and the gang show up. It's pretty awesome how that turns.
Yeah, they're not prepared for the realities.
So, predictions for me, I think more Sunset Club, there will be more humans that want to become vampires. This is a cool theme. I think you can't watch this episode without wanting like more of that. And that gives humans a more interesting position to be in, as opposed to just being victims. It is like, well, no, this vampire, being a vampire would be cool.
So, yeah, bunch of Renfields running around.
Yeah, or something like that. Like, more human. I mean, I don't want to, it's too general to say, oh, humans will assist vampires. I mean, humans will want to be vampires.
Yeah. Well, that was Renfield's motivation, right? Is he was going to be gifted the life eternal.
Mike, can I ask you specifically, because I just want to make sure I'm doing my prediction accounting appropriately.
Sure.
Is this two separate predictions? One is that we'll see the Sunset Club itself, and a separate one that we will see more humans who want to be vampires? Or is that one prediction?
Definitely more humans.
Sorry to be difficult.
No, there will definitely be more humans that want to be vampires. I want the Sunset Club to come back. I want to be cheering for the Sunset Club, but I feel like, yeah, we'll do something at Sunset Club because it will be fun to go back and everyone will be like, man, remember when the vampires really came? Like, that's going to change that goth club permanently. whether they actually go to the Sunset Club or it's a new club, but the Sunset Club is a real place that happened, and the goth kids that were there or whatever, like, are going to remember it and be scared by it. Because I don't, Diego and Chanarelle don't get killed, right? Like, they escape. Yeah. It's just Ford that gets turned, right?
So, like, I think other people die.
I think it's just Ford.
Ford dies.
In my count, really? I just got Ford.
Yeah, makes no sense.
Buffy, like, helps everybody else escape because they were going to, it was part of his, Ford's plan for all the other people to be food as part of his, like, you know, whatever, like, the price he pays. But Buffy helps everybody escape except for Ford.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Buffy wiki has two no name vampires and the Ford vampire.
Yep, that is my kill count also. Ford counts twice. He's both killed as a vampire and as a human.
Poor Ford.
Question. Sorry, is that all your predictions?
Those are all my predictions. I probably
We have one prediction before. Confirmed.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, when Giles and Ms. Calendar went on a date to the high school football game, you predicted that later they will go on a date to somewhere better. And I think Monster Truck Rally counts. I think we can confirm that as of now. Also, there's one I was going to make the case that because when Kristen was a guest on the show, she predicted that we I had that backwards. I thought she predicted that we would see Owen again. That was going to make the case that seeing Ford counts as seeing Owen twice. But she actually predicted we'll never see Owen again. So never mind. That one is still open and yet to be seen if we're going to see Owen again.
Don't worry. In 5 years, we can close that case.
Yeah, I like all the really the hanging recommendations that are not recommendations, predictions that there's just no way of proving until the very last episode.
Right.
Yeah. No, what's going to happen is when
it's
going to
be such a cluster.
We're going to go down a list of like, you know, like at the rate we're going, we're going to go down a list of something like 300 predictions.
That can be its own really like meticulous episode, like a pre, like a post Buffy.
But then I can I call for backup? Can I also say like, well, haven't watched all of Angel yet, or there's the Buffy series, you know, comic book.
I think you can do that only if you watch all of Angel and read all of the Buffy comic books.
Yeah, which I don't like. Even I haven't done that, and
I've heard. So I got an unsolicited recommendation on Twitter from someone that's listened to the podcast that said we should absolutely watch all of Angel, and it's better than Buffy.
There's a lot of opinions about that.
Yeah, apparently.
There's a lot of opinions in this room about that.
I one time was having a poker game at my apartment, and a guy I didn't really know saw that I had every season of Buffy and only like half the seasons of Angel, and he started to like give me grief about it. He's like, Angel's the better show. And I was like, I am about to fight this guy. Like nobody comes into my house and tells me what DVDs I should own. I have the good seasons of Angel.
Let's go to recommendations. I have two recommendations as well this week.
Oh, cool.
Bennett, what else?
Oh man, no, you can't talk for me. I have two recommendations that I'm shouting out because somebody said the word Lost Boys. Words. So my two favorite 80s vampires movies are, number one, My Best Friend is a Vampire. It has Robert Sean Leonard, and it's amazing. And also, oh God, okay, no, music by Steve Dorff. No, Stephen Dorff is not in it, but music by Steve. And then my second recommendation is Once Bitten. That's just pretty insane. It's got early Jim Carrey, 1985, and it's got Lauren Hutton in it. So my two favorite 80s movies are both like comedies. So yeah, check that out. My Best Friend is a Vampire and Once Bitten. I'm a big RSL fan, so start with My Best Friend is a Vampire.
All right, cool. My recommendations are Martin and Thirst. Because they're both vampire movies, and this is a vampire episode, and they're both kind of specifically dealing with like the cliches of the vampire genre and playing against them. And they both kind of treat vampirism as a disease, which I think this episode kind of touches on a little. Martin is George Romero's vampire movie. And Thirst is kind of famous as the David Bowie vampire movie that David Bowie's barely in. More of the Susan Sarandon vampire movie. But yeah, I think Buffy fans will like both of them.
Awesome. Great recommendations.
Yeah, excellent.
All right. Well, next week we'll be doing the next episode here. Let's look that up quickly. Everybody, did everybody see that Buffy's off Netflix now?
That's a pretty, no, it is.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I saw that.
Wow.
That's kind of a big deal. I mean, I already watched season two on DVD, but that means I'm committed now.
Yeah, that's really weird, actually. Buffy's blowing up right now because of the Buffy Slays 20 thing. Mm-hmm. Like, so now that Buffy is probably more popular than it's been in like years to take it off.
Yeah, I think just to recap. I mean, when you're hearing this, this is old news for the listener when they're hearing this, that the Buffy is off Netflix. I guess my recommendation is for quality. You know, DVD still is probably the best quality. To me, there's not any real significant difference in quality between Amazon and Apple and Google Play and the Microsoft Store. So it's all kind of average. So whatever is most convenient for you is probably what I'd recommend to watch it.
So the next episode is The Dark Age. So season 2, episode 8. This one looks like it's, I mean, we saw this when Dennis was in town, so I'm psyched to rewatch this one. This was a fun, wacky episode of Buffy. So looking forward to it. All right. Well, thanks for joining us. Any other thing? DennisComics.com.
Yep.
The Virgin Pod on Twitter.
Yeah. Follow us, on Twitter, Instagram, Buffy Virgin. I just submitted a comic to the new issue of Doublethink. I'm not sure when that's coming out, but sometime soon. I have a comic in that called Whispers in the Woods about kids meeting monsters, a monster in the woods.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks everybody.
Thanks for listening to Buffy Virgin. Please follow the show by checking us out on Instagram, instagram.com/BuffyVirgin. We're at Buffy Virgin Pod on Twitter. And leave us a review in iTunes. It helps out the show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.